Before that, let's ask the Lord to be with us as we study His Word. Father, we just thank You for this day, and just pray as we continue to study the book of Joel and these different prophecies, some that have been fulfilled earlier in history and some that are going to be fulfilled later in time, at a time that You have appointed and within Your timeline. Just give us wisdom as we study it. If those don't have questions to ask, pray that they'll feel free to ask those questions. Be with those who aren't here today as they may be traveling. Keep them safe on the road. We think of Dietrich in Italy. Be with him and watch over him. Protect him, Lord. We just thank You for him and for his willingness to serve his country. We ask all these things in Your name. Amen. Everybody heard who died this past week, right? Fidel Castro, right? Have you? Yeah. I had someone send me some stuff on some comments made by Western leaders about, I don't know if these people know Cuba, if they think they know Cuba, but here's the Prime Minister of Canada, current Prime Minister of Canada. He says, Fidel Castro was a larger-than-life leader who served his people for almost a half century, a legendary revolutionary and orator. Mr. Castro made significant improvements to the education and health care of his island nation. While a controversial figure, both Mr. Castro's supporters and detractors recognize his tremendous dedication and love for all the Cuban people, who had a deep and lasting affection for El Comandante. And he goes on to say, my father was very proud to call him a friend. You know, when you read this stuff, you understand where history's turning, where people are rewriting history books and trying to portray something that's not really true. Nowhere did he ask the people who fled Cuba, the ones who die by the thousands every year trying to come across on rafts. You know, when you go there as a VIP, you get a VIP tour. You're only going to see what they want you to see and not what the country really looks like. The Secretary General of the UN says here that Fidel Castro will be remembered for his leadership of the Cuban Revolution and for advances in Cuba in the fields of education, literacy, and health. His revolutionary ideas left few indifferent. He was a strong voice for social justice. Wow. In global discussions at the UN General Assembly and international and regional forums. President Barack Obama. At this time of Fidel Castro's passing, we extend a hand of friendship to the Cuban people. We know that this moment fills Cubans in Cuba and in the United States with powerful emotions, recalling the countless ways in which Fidel Castro altered the course of individual lives, families, and of the Cuban nation. History will record and judge the enormous impact of this singular figure on the people and world around him. Today, we offer condolences to his family, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Cuban people. Secretary of State John Kerry, then I'll end with this one. You don't even know there's 10 of them. He says, we extend our condolences to the Cuban people as they mourn the passing of Fidel Castro. Over more than a half a century, he played an outsized role in their lives, and he influenced the direction of regional, even global affairs. Yeah, he did it really positively. As our two countries continue to move forward on a process of normalization, restoring the economic, diplomatic, and cultural ties severed by a troubled past, we do so in a spirit of friendship and with an earnest desire not to ignore history, but to write a new and better, see that, but to write a new and better future for our two people. Americans have never been upset with the Cuban people. It's been with the dictator. And yet I hear guys, college professors get on the radio, well, he was a great revolutionary. He stood up to the United States. And he backed the United States down. And so kids in school, you have to understand that if you have grandkids in a secular college, that's what they're being taught. And you wonder why you got young kids out demonstrating. It's because of what they're hearing in high school and or college. That's the dilemma we're in, and yet it continues to do that. I was listening to the radio Wednesday, and I saw that Hannah. You can ask a question when I'm done here. A young 22-year-old U of M grad, Hispanic, told a guy on the radio that we Americans need to be conscious of the fact that the Mexican people were indigenous to here. And I went, really? How did that happen? I know Native Indians are here. Where did And of course, the guy talking to her got on her case. He said, wait a minute. There wasn't even Mexicans until the Spanish came over and they mixed with the Indians. Oh, no, that's not true. And he went, where are you here? Well, my professor at U of M told us that wasn't true, that we've been here hundreds of years before even Columbus got here. You see what's going on with young people, and they hear this because to them the professor is the gospel. I hate saying it that way, but that's what they go there, and when they hear that, they're so young, they're admiring these professors who teach that stuff. That's what she believed. So she was out trying to rally people. Well, why would you want to build a wall? Because it's our country anyway. You stole it from us. See what's going on? So it keeps fueling this fire. Let's go over to what's happening in Europe. Oh, Gross, you had your hand up. You got a question? I've said this for a long time, and this goes back to my days when I was helping with the youth group at Flushing First Baptist. You have to be a strong Christian young person to go into a secular university. You better be grounded pretty good, because if you're not, they're going to change you by the time you come out. That's been the plan all through time. I experienced this as a 28 and 29-year-old when I was up at CMU. And you could ask my wife, I'd come home and be frustrated, but the difference was I wasn't afraid to speak out in class about things. Sometimes that'd get you in trouble. Sometimes that would affect your grade. But, oh well, I was trying to play this side of it so this other side of these young kids wouldn't be caught up into this training, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it, brainwashing. It's gone on. If you remember right what I told you back when we were doing the prophet series, Russia's head KJB back in the 40s says, let America go. Don't change anything. It will change itself through education. And that's exactly what's happened. His prophecy has come true. Through education, it has changed. And if we all think education is good in all the schools, be careful, because it's not. It may be good, but what they're picking up with those subtle messages by a teacher in a high school in a history class or a science class, and definitely when you go to a university, and the sad part now today, and I think Kurt would agree with this, there's no guarantees if you go to a Christian university. There's no guarantees there. So things are rapidly changing. In Europe, a town called, I'm probably not pronouncing this right, Wuppertal? Wuppertal, close enough. A German court there has ruled that seven alamas who formed a vigilante patrol to enforce Sharia law in this town did not break German law and were simply exercising their right to free speech. The politically correct decision, which may be appealed, effectively authorizes the Sharia police to continue enforcing Islamic law in this town. Again, separate from the German law. That's what they want. That's what they're getting, because everyone wants to be politically correct. Jan and I watched a movie last night. It was, don't know if it was true, but it kind of gives you the picture of what's going on in this world. They're going to take out top five Islamic terrorists. And they're at this house in Kenya. But it's in a Somali neighborhood that's different from Nairobi, because You can't get into it. It's patrolled by Somali terrorists. They have a drone with two Americans back in wherever they're at controlling this drone, and they're going to take out this house. The problem is there's a little girl sitting outside the house selling bread. It takes the movie an hour and a half before all the diplomatic channels pan out to destroy the house because of this girl. Now, I know it's terrible. The four in the house were getting vests on full of explosives, going to go someplace and blow up, who knows, hundreds of people. It took them that long to make a decision to do what they did. And I have a feeling in real life that's probably what goes on. It's got to be approved by this person, this person, this person, this person, out of the hands of the military. And really what was troubling was it was between Britain and the United States. The Brits wanted to wait. America was saying, no, just do it. Get it over with. So I think that goes on today, too. And it's this politically correctness that we voted probably the way we did because we're tired of the politically correctness that we have to pan out here. One more, I think. The Archbishop of Canterbury has finally spoken out on Islamic terrorists. Interesting. Okay, so you have him telling them that in your Quran, it teaches you to do these things. You need to, it's your religion, then you need to take it back as your religion and go after these people who are doing this in the name of your religion. He's the first European who has spoken out that way against that. Nancy sent me an email last night. Jimmy Carter is asking President Obama, before he leaves office, to go to the UN and to vote that the two-state Palestinian solution becomes effective. I don't know if Obama's going to do that or not. You all know where Jimmy Carter stands. Quote, unquote, he's a Christian. Okay? There are Christian people who think that's a good way to solve everything. That's going to bring peace, those who don't understand their Bible. Okay? Yes? Yep.
That was a big thing. It was pretty exciting.
That's true. People are still being saved all over the world during this time. So, you know, that's the positive. It's, I know we dwell on the negative, probably more so. I think we dwell on the negative because it has so much to do with our understanding of prophecy and seeing things being moving in that direction. And that may be why we do it. Okay, we're going to continue in Joel chapter 2, the demonic invasion, just a continuation of last week. I want to start out by saying this. Joel was pretty explicit in chapter 1. A historic event took place then that it was actual locusts that came and devoured the land. In chapter 2, it's not a continuation of chapter 1. If it was real locusts in chapter 2, Joel would have what? Said it. He wouldn't have any difference. Okay? And what he's saying is he's describing things like this. He's not describing a locust. He's describing something like a horse. Different. Very different. And what happens when we see these things, like when I go on look at other commentaries as well, chapter 2 is a prophetic, it's a poetic chapter. It reverts back to chapter 1. See, what you do is you take away the future prophetic event that's going to happen later on. So in reality, Revelation 9 becomes a poetic chapter, so we spiritualize that. That's the danger. If Joel was describing locusts in chapter 1, which he did, which actually was fulfilled, he would have done the same things in chapter 2 and 3. He never used the word locust again. It's a different prophetic event that's going to take place. And that's the way Fruchtenbaum explains it. That's the way I agree with it. that it's two different. One was fulfilled historically during his time. The other ones have not been fulfilled yet. Okay? Have not been fulfilled. So we're in Revelation. We're in Joel chapter 2. And actually, we're going to cover. Wow. What happened, Kurt? Joel chapter 2, verses 4 through 9. Okay, 4 through 9. This is still not working the way I want it to. All right, I'm seeing a different one. Okay, let's go to chapter 2. And we'll read 4 through 9. Okay. He's now going to describe what these things look like. Okay. They look like horses. They're not horses. They look like horses. If they were horses, he would have said they are horses. They look like horses. Okay. And like cavalry, they charge. With the rumble like that of chariots, they leap over the mountaintops. Like crackling flames devouring stubble. Like a mighty horde in battle array. At their presence, the people wither in anguish. Every face is drained of color. Like warriors, they charge. They scale the walls like soldiers. Each one keeps to his own course without getting in the other's way. They don't jostle each other, but stay on their own path. They burst through defenses unarmed without even breaking rank. They rush into the city. They run along the wall. They climb up into the houses, entering like a thief through the windows. So we have this description of them like this in verses 4 through 9. Verse 4 describes their appearances as the appearance of horses, and they run as horses. I put that down on the sheet of paper that I gave you. So they have the appearance of horses. They're not horses. They appear to him as horses. Okay. This is not an ordinary military invasion. Dr. Fruchtenbaum, within this lesson, believes these are demonic, and will tie into Revelation chapter 9 a little later if we get that far today. So it's not an ordinary military invasion. Verse 5 describes the noise they make. They make a crackling sound like fire. Not saying they're doing, they make a crackling sound like fire. Okay? So he's hearing something, but he doesn't have the word to explain what that is, what that noise is. It sounds like crackling of fire. In verse 6, we see that verse 6 describes the terror they will cause. People see them, they are in anguish. Their faces turn pale or white. So their people are very fearful of what this is. Okay? Very fearful. And verse 7 through 8 emphasizes their speed and their discipline. Okay, everyone see the discipline they have? They walk in rank or file straight ahead. No one gets out of the path. They do not break off their course. They stay right in lines. Okay, whatever these are, that's how he's describing them. That's how he sees them. Okay, that's how he sees them. So it's something out of the ordinary. Okay, out of the ordinary. As they march, I have in here, everyone walks in step and keeps in the line of their part. Verse 9 describes their attack. Verse 9 describes their attack. Verse 9 says, They leap upon the city, they run upon the wall, they climb up into the houses, they enter in at the windows like a thief. I put up here, what is being described is similar to the locust invasion, yet they are different from the locusts. Not the same. It's not a poetic chapter going back to verse chapter 1. It's something different. Because he's not describing locusts here. These are described as the appearances of horses that do the same thing, yet they're different in what they're doing. They have certain characteristics, such as horse-like characteristics, which prove they are not locusts. That's one of the main things I got out in chapter 2. They are not the same. Okay? If they were locusts, Joel would have said they were locusts. He describes them as something like a horse. Something like a horse. The description in chapter 1 wasn't like that. He said they were locusts. Historically, in that day, back in 830 B.C., there was a locust invasion of locusts. Real, literal locusts that devour the land. That happened. Remember, Joel asked the fathers, do you remember this ever happening in your generation? No. Did your father's fathers ever tell you about this? No. It was a different invasion. It was locusts. It was insects. These are not insects. These are not a swarm of insects. This is something like an army, something out of the ordinary, something that we won't be here to see. Okay? We won't be here to see this. Wow. I got to get out of this. This is not working. I apologize. Any questions? We're not done. I'm just going to redo this so I can get this to work the way I want it to work.
Here you keep concentrating that they're not locusts, they're like horses. But what's the significance of that?
I think because commentaries have said it's a revert back to chapter 1. That chapter 2 is no more than a poetic way of explaining chapter 1. So we spiritualize it. So Joel wants to make the distinction. One happened. They were locusts. Now it's something. These invasions are different. I think that's what he's trying to point out here. If they would have been the same, I believe, Joel would have used the word locust in chapter 2 or in chapter 3. He doesn't do that. He describes something similar to it, but yet the appearance of something is vastly different. Nowhere in chapter 1 does he say it's the appearance of locusts. He just comes right out and says it was a locust. The locust destroyed the land. Four stages of locust infestation. Okay?
Well, the verse says, an appearance of the locust and the appearance of the locust.
And where? Where?
Not
the see, not, yeah, see, the difference we get is in these translations of the Bible again. I'm using the ASV, so it doesn't say they're locusts. Remember, the translations to me, this is what happens, people. Men who do them, for the most part, they're okay, but they will twist things to make it fit into their belief. That's the best way to describe it.
What is your version of 2-7?
Mine says they run like mighty men. 2-4, the appearance of them is as the appearance of horses.
And the appearance of the locusts was like horses.
That's okay. Remember, be careful with, I'm not saying there's one translation better than the other one. Be careful with them because they're done by men who meet together and do this, and most of the time they're okay. But sometimes they're going to take a bent on the group within that group. So if they're saying they're locusts, those are the poetic guys who are trying to tie it back into chapter 1 again. Yes. That's the main thing. Chapter 1 happened. Chapter 2 and 3 are far in the future. Like I said.
He's trying to teach that you ask the old men and their fathers and their fathers' fathers. So the likeness is that nobody's seen it before. It's complete devastation. It's something no one saw. Now he's going into prophetic saying it's going to be just like that. The locust and that nobody has seen it before. Complete devastation. Except then he starts going through differences. These are things that run and work.
Right. That things that Joel couldn't even understand. Right. Remember, he didn't say they are, they're like. So he's describing something to us that he really doesn't have the word to say what they're like. Okay? Did he have the word demon back then? Maybe. Okay? Fruckenbaum will tie this into Revelation 9. Okay? And that's where it gets a little different because you can go either way in Revelation 9 with this lesson. Okay? Yes, in Revelation 9, the first 11 verses, it is a demonic invasion. It's pretty clear there what that is. Does it fit this right here? Okay? That's the question. Does Revelation 9, 1 through 11, fit Joel 2, this part right here? And we're going to look at that later and see. Okay? So it causes similar devastation, okay? We know that. The result of the invasion is given in verse 10. The earth quakes before them, the heavens tremble, the sun and moon are darkened, and the stars withdraw their shining. It's going to be pretty dark, okay? So that's the result of the invasion. It's going to be pretty dark. Nothing's going to have any light on earth, so to speak, okay? During the day of Jehovah. In my mind, this happens up front, somewhere in the first part of the trib. Doesn't happen before the trib because he said it happens during the day of Jehovah. Not a particular day like we think, remember? The day of Jehovah covers the whole Great Tribulation, all 7 years of it. Some point in time in the first half, this takes place. Okay? When this invasion occurs, there are two major results. There's two major results when this invasion takes place. Number one, a tremendous convulsion of nature. You just set it up there. The earth quakes. Not just an area, the entire earth quakes. The heavens tremble. Okay? That's very different than an earthquake in one area of the country. This is the entire earth will quake. And I think what he's trying to paint a picture of here in Joel and throughout the Old Testament with this tribulation stuff and in Revelation, it's not a good time here. And like I said before, the Tim LaHaye books kind of glamorized that time frame. It really did. You know, people surviving and people doing this. I get a different picture of what's going on when I read it from the Bible. It's not a good time to be here. It's not a glamorous time to be here. We can think that all we want, but I don't believe it's that way. The second thing that happens, it's a blackout across the entire world. It's a blackout. Again, not just the Eastern Hemisphere or the entire world is a blackout. How does that happen? Well, science, you know, science, that couldn't possibly happen. God can do whatever he wants to do. I don't need science to say that could never happen. God's going to make it happen. All this stuff is him making things happen. If he says it's an entire blackout, I take him at his word. It's an entire blackout. Okay? Entire blackout. It means there's no light will penetrate the earth from the sun, the moon, and the stars. There's no light. Okay? No light. No light will penetrate the earth from the sun, moon, and stars. He believes, and I believe, that throughout the last days, there's five such blackouts that occur. If you go back and through and count them, there's five of them that are talked about that occur, one before the day of Jehovah begins, and then some during that time. Okay, we're not going to get into those. That's a whole other different study. This one in Joel is 3 of 5 and occurs in the early part of the tribulation. Not at the end, in the early part. In the early part of the trib. In verse 11, Joel gives the reasons why they must occur. Okay? And it says here, "And Jehovah utters his voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executes his word. For the day of Jehovah is great and very terrible, and who can abide it?" In other words, who can survive it? It's that bad. Why? No. We'll get to that.
The Lord gives his voice before his army.
But look at his. It's little h. It's not his army. So it's little in the ASV. Okay. Verse 11. Okay. Translations again. It occurs because of divine judgment from God. That's why this is going to happen. Okay. He allows this to take place. Okay. He states that God is able to execute his word, and he will execute it during the great and very, very terrible day of Jehovah. So that's when he does this. This is when this takes place. Remember, this is not Jehovah's army coming to do this. Jehovah doesn't have an army. The army that we come back with, we don't do anything. Okay? He's allowing something to occur that's very unnatural. And when we get into Revelation 9, we'll see that. Okay? We'll see that. And we're going to get right into Revelation 9 here shortly. The period of special divine judgment of the tribulation has finally hit. Hence the question, he's asked it, who can abide it? Who can survive it? That's what he's saying. Who can survive this? Okay. Dr. Fruchtenbaum believes what Joel describes in these verses is the same thing John described in Revelation chapter 9. So let's go to Revelation chapter 9. Revelation chapter 9. It says, "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven fallen unto the earth, and there was given to him the key of the pit of the abyss. And he opened the pit of the abyss, and there went up smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air was darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And out of the smoke came forth locusts upon the earth, and power was given them as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only such men as have not the seal of God on their foreheads. And it was given them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. So here we have something like locust, but have a tail that stings like a scorpion. Okay, that's what he's describing. He believes the abyss, these are demons. Okay, these are demons that have been chained there for eternity so far. At some point, they're released with a key, this demons. He's describing demons in his only way that he can describe them. These aren't locusts that are locked up into a pit. That doesn't make any sense. Okay? The appearance is like locusts. What they do, they're tormenting man for 5 months. Now, the question you have to ask, if you go back to Joel chapter 2, that particular demonic thing destroys what? The earth. This one doesn't do that. It doesn't say that there. It says they're not even supposed to do that. What they do is they sting men who don't have the seal of God, and they somehow it torments man for 5 months. He's much more of a scholar than I am, people. I struggled with this because it doesn't say the same thing. The ones in chapter 2 destroy the earth, the grass, etc., etc. This particular group is told specifically not to harm the earth, only to sting those who don't have the seal of God. Yep. Very good point. Yeah, they're swarming. The thing I want you to do is be Bereans and study this. I struggle with it, and I told Kirk this a couple of weeks ago. I was going to struggle with it because I couldn't grasp the correlation between the two. Yes, I believe there's a demonic invasion that happens here. This is what this is in Revelation 9. This is what it's telling you. It's pretty clear. You know, it's not even important who has the key to open the abyss. Somebody opens the abyss. And there's demons that come out, and they torment men for 5 months. That's what they do. That's what it says. It doesn't say, and I can't imply it because that would be doing something that's making a subjective thing to read into it would be they're also harming the earth because it says right there they're told not to do it. Who's telling them not to do it? Who has control over the demons?
Someone with all the authority.
Who's that? God. God, yeah. They can't do that. Now, are they capable of doing that? Yes. But here in Revelation 9, this group doesn't do that. Okay? All right, let's go on. We'll keep reading. And I'm trying to do the best I can with this because it's been a struggle for me. In this lesson, in Revelation 9, there's two demonic invasions occur. Now, if you read commentaries, everyone agrees this first one is a demonic army. The second one, it happens in chapters or verse 12 to 21, most believe it's a human army. Human army. That he's describing things that he can't describe. That's what other commentaries will go with. Okay? And we're not studying that. We talked about this way back when. But I just want to point out. So here, within his lesson, he's teaching two demonic invasions occur in Revelation chapter 9. In verses 1 through 11, we just read it, the purpose is for tormenting. The purpose is not to destroy the earth or the vegetation. That doesn't happen. In fact, they're explicitly told not to do that. Going back to Joel 2, that's what they do, though. In Joel 2, that particular demons, they destroy the earth, the grass, the trees, etc., etc. They're doing exactly what they're told to do, what they're allowed to do. Here is different. The demons are given authority to torment men for 5 months, but not to kill them. All right? We just read that. It must be pretty bad if you can torment men for 5 months where you're in pain so bad that you don't even want to live, but you don't die. Okay, that's the kind of the picture that I get. Okay, in verses 13 through 21 of Revelation 9, this demonic invasion occurs after the first one, and this one kills one-third of mankind. Let's read it, starting in verse 13. This is the sixth trumpet. So you had the fifth trumpet, the demons, now you're into the sixth trumpet. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the horns of the golden altar, which is before God. one saying to the sixth angel that had the trumpet, loose the four angels that are bound at the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed that had been prepared for the hour and day and month and a year. If you add that up, it comes up to 13 months. That they should kill what? The third part of man. One third. If there's 8 billion people on the planet today, what's one third of 8 billion? Almost three. Earlier in the book of Revelation, you had another third that was killed. That's six. That's just counting these specific judgments. That doesn't count what's going on because of the earthquakes and everything else going on. So you've had a multitude of people, billions of people, if there's that many left by that time, who are being killed. Verse 16, and the number of the armies of the horsemen was twice 10,000 times 10,000, 200 million. Probably in your verses it says 200 million. I heard the number of them. Now, when he says that, some people say, well, is it literal? Is it symbolic? I think when he says I think it's a great number. 200 million? It could be 200 million. I have no problem with believing it's 200 million. Okay? Right. I mean, he's being so explicit again with that number. And we're going to close right when I get down to it. And thus I saw the horses in the vision. So again, he's seeing horses. Horses are that's what he keeps seeing. Horses in Joel chapter 2, other horses in Revelation. That's what he's seeing in the vision. And them that sat on them, having breastplates as of fire, and incense, and of brimstone, and the heads of the horses are as the heads of lions. So obviously they're not horses. He's describing something kind of whatever. And out of their mouths proceed fire and smoke and brimstone. So somehow out of their mouth, they're killing with fire. Okay? By these three plagues was a third part of man killed, by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone which proceeded out of their mouths. For the power of the horses is in their mouth and in their what? Tails. So somehow they can do something from their backside. Whatever they are, okay? Whatever they are. For their tails are like unto serpents and have heads, and with them they hurt. And the rest of mankind who were not killed with these plagues, look what they did. What does it say there? They repented not of the works of their hands, and they should not worship demons, and the idol of gold and silver and of brass, etc. They just went on doing whatever they keep doing. So one third of the world population destroyed, and whoever survives this just carries on with life. Just goes on. Here's your challenge. Study these things in Joel 2 and in Revelation 9. I think Revelation 9 is talking about a human army of some kind. It's not Armageddon. You know, the four angels are there right now at the Euphrates. They haven't been given permission to do anything. Could it be the four angels are demons who lead this army? Yes. Could be. I mean, a lot of things about demons going on around the world with super soldiers and who knows. Okay? They're not horses. If they were horses, he would have said that. They represent something. And I don't know what that something is. It's horrible, whatever they are. Period. That's the best way to say it. They're just horrible. And yet they can kill from the front and from the back. And that's what they sent out to do. And then I just put on, here's your challenge. Are these the same or similar to Joel's description in chapter 2? Are they the same? The one here is not Armageddon, because Armageddon is led by who? Antichrist. Not the four angels. These are not good angels. It doesn't say they're good or bad. I'm assuming they're bad, because they're leading to kill mankind. That's what they are. Could it be demon generals, whatever you want to call them? Yep. Do demons have to look nasty? No, because demons appear like, they could appear like you and me. Is the Antichrist going to be a demon? You're going to act like one eventually, right? So he's going to look human. So we have to understand that. This is different times than what we're seeing today. Could it be a super army, super soldiers? Possibility. I don't know. But whatever they are, they're terrible. And the time of that time is going to be horrific. I think that's the part that Revelation portrays. I think that's the part that Joel chapter 2 is trying to portray too. He's warning his people that before the kingdom comes into being, before that happens, these things have to take place. And if you understand that, everything else stays in the proper perspective. All right, let's bow for prayer. Two different events. Two different events. They're not the same event. I would say just take them for what it says. Whatever it is, it's horrible, so it's really going to... Yeah, they're two different events. I think the first one happens early on. I think this one happens somewhere just before the midpoint. That's my take on it. Could happen toward the end, just before Armageddon. Whatever it is bad. Okay? Both the same. And that's okay. I mean, there's other people who do the same. Most people don't see them that way. But, you know, I could see that way. I struggle with the first one because one destroys, in Joel chapter, like we said, destroys the earth. This first one says not to touch the earth. That's two, to me, that's very different. One is tormenting men. The next one comes in is very different. It's killing men. But they could be really close together, boom and boom, too. We don't know that. I don't know that. All right? All right. Thank you for your participation and questions. Tough lesson. Okay? Tough lesson. You need to study it for yourself and draw your own conclusions based on the Bible. Okay? And I think Kurt would agree the simplest way just to take it for what it says. They're two distinct events led by one we know for sure is demon. The second one is pretty close to something like that. And it's horrible. That's the best way to do it. Yeah, it could be. Yep. He leads that group in that first one. Demon for sure. All right, let's wrap up here because it's getting late. Father, we just thank you for this day and for your word. Pray that you'll be with us now as we go into this time of fellowship, and pray that we'll be attentive to Kurt's message this morning and your word. For we ask all this in your name. Amen.